5 days ago, the Chicago Bears traded the number one overall pick to the Carolina Panthers. That feels like it was five centuries ago because only since then, we have had a bevy of free agency moves, and free agency only is just starting right now. And oh, by the way, on Monday, our very own Trey Wingo tweeted out that Aaron Rodgers was going to the Jets. It was done. Aaron Rodgers himself confirmed it detail for detail today. We have so much to get into. And with me to talk about it is that man, Trey Wingo. What's up, buddy? How you doing?
Brett, I'm doing good. How are you, man? Everything good with you?
Everything's good. Everything's good. I feel like there's a lot to talk about regarding the sport of football these days.
It's like things happen all the time and there's never an off season. It's crazy.
Yeah, weird. Just how they love it. Well, guess what? The good thing is this part of the year, we don't do this alone. We also get to get joined by Pro Football Network senior NFL draft analyst. That is Tony Pauline. I have two of the best people with me, Trey and Tony, to talk about all of the news going on. And we're going to start with Aaron Rodgers and the New York Jets. Aaron Rodgers confirmed today on the Pat McAfee Show, Trey, something you tweeted out on Monday. I'm going to read your tweet verbatim. Quote, hearing Rodgers to the Jets is done. History about to repeat itself between New York and Green Bay. Time is indeed a flat circle. Trey, later on yesterday, you went on the 33rd team with Ari Myrov and also doubled down, saying that this deal was agreed to on Friday. Today, Aaron Rodgers confirmed all of that. What are your thoughts on everything and how it's unfolded?
Well, you know, it was what I expected. You know, there's always some anxious moments until you hear it from Aaron, but I, you know, my sources, I believe, were rock solid, and they've never let me down before, so I felt pretty good about it. And again, I want to be clear, you know, and I could have worded the tweet Monday slightly better. Aaron Rodgers is going to the Jets. That part was certain, and that part had been agreed to a long time ago. And there's still some details being finalized, but you know, people are saying this could take a long time, and there's no rush on the Packers. That's not accurate. 99% of this deal is in place. Otherwise, Aaron wouldn't have gone on and said what he said. So it's not like now there's a huge drawn out process to finish the deal. We're basically the paperwork, from what I was led to believe, is on the 1-inch line already. So, in fact, I can also confirm that the sources that told me that Aaron Rodgers is going to play for the Jets are also telling me he's going to be in New York next week.
Oh,
so,
wow.
You know, I don't have any reason to doubt that part of it either. So this is not going to be, from what I've been led to believe, a long, drawn-out process. This deal, when I first put out that tweet on Monday, the sources were telling me it's being finalized as we speak. So there might be a couple of little things that need to be ticked off, but it is not like, okay, Aaron has said his intentions, and now we got to find this massive divide and find a way to cross it. That is not the way it has been portrayed to me at all.
Right. Now, Tony, why you're a great person to have on and talk about this exact situation is all the way back on February 2nd in a report that you provided to Pro Football Network, and you can be found on profootballnetwork.com. You reported that Joe Douglas was all in and going all out to acquire Aaron Rodgers, which now seemingly is taking place. Walk us through that part of the process.
Yeah, thanks for having me. After that introduction, I was wondering whether or not I was on the show. We'll have to talk to PFN about that. But basically what happened is the story actually originated when we were at Shrine Bowl practice, covering the Shrine Bowl, and people there told me the Jets are going to make a move, or the Jets are in for Aaron Rodgers. And in the days that followed, traveling from Vegas to Mobile for Senior Bowl practice, the word got louder and louder that Joe Douglas was telling people the Jets would be all in to get Aaron Rodgers. And I was waiting for confirmation. Ironically, I was at an establishment called the Haberdashery in Mobile, Alabama.
Fantastic, Tony. The Haberdashery.
With some agents, some NFL people, and Jeremy Fowler of ESPN.
Oh,
I got the final confirmation that I was waiting for, to basically say, okay, I could go with this. I left Jeremy with the dark ale that I had purchased him, went back to the room, came out with the story. And as we've seen, you know, the past 24 plus hours, the Jets are in fact all in. I mean, signing Alan Lazard, going after Mercedes Lewis. There's talk about Randall Cobb. So, yeah, I mean, the Jets basically did everything that I said in that article on February 2nd, that they were going to do everything possible to bring Aaron Rodgers to New York.
Yeah, what Tony just said, Brett, is so important because no team, no other team in the NFL, the 30 teams not named the Jets or the Packers, no other team would say, hey, what are our offseason priorities? Well, we got to try and find Mercedes Lewis, who is 94 and playing very well. And
not his jersey number, by the way. Yeah, that's his chronological
age. Yeah. And we got to find Randall Cobb. It was all there. Okay. Yeah. Like they're telling you everything. And, you know, Mark Murphy said something over the weekend that I didn't think got enough traction. He was at a Packer function somewhere and a local reporter asked him about, you know, the idea of Aaron Rodgers playing somewhere else. And he said, well, you know, players tend to move on. Brett Favre was here and had a great career. And that one played somewhere else. And then the next sentence out of his mouth was, Aaron Rodgers had a great career here.
He didn't say is having or has.
He said had.
Yeah.
And that's why the other part of this is, I don't think it's going to get as drawn out, is the Jets are basically, they went into this open kimono, basically. Here's what we got. You know what I mean? They are all in, as Tony was saying, all in on this. So they have to get it done, especially after – after Rodgers went on and said, I want to play there. The Packers also have to have this done because Jordan Love is entering year four of his rookie deal. He's played one start when Rodgers was injured. He's played a handful of snaps or a couple of starts. And they need to know what they have. And the only reason for the only way for them to know what they have is to play him and then decide whether or not they're going to pick up his fifth year option. So as much as people are saying it's so imperative on the Jets to get this deal done, it's just as imperative for the Green Bay Packers.
And I got to think, Trey, you know, as I mentioned last week, and we've both known that the Packers wanted Aaron Rodgers out the door. And as I said last week, reported from the Combine on Pro Football Network, they wanted to do it in a respectful manner. And I got to imagine the Green Bay Packers couldn't be any happier the way this played out.
Yeah. I agree. You're 100% right, because this makes it easier for them to sell it to their fan base instead of saying we're moving on from Aaron Rodgers, which, by the way, they wanted to do. Let's be clear about this. Yeah. They wanted to move on from him. But now they can say, well, Aaron wanted to go play somewhere else. So we'll just have to find out what we have in Jordan Love. It's an easier sell to one of the best fan bases in football.
Let's talk about that fan base for 1 second. I actually recorded a video that I think is going to come out at some point talking about the comparisons between Favre and Rodgers. How should Packer fans feel about this after having gone through with Brett Favre? Tony, I'd love to get your thoughts on this first. How should Packer fans view a move like this? Is this something they should, you know, be okay with because the organization seemingly was ready to move on? Or should they have a, you know, feel a little sour grapes about this?
I think it's going to be a mixture of both. I mean, he won a Super Bowl title there. He was MVP. I mean, he was all Mr. Packer. And you're going to have Packer fans showing up, you know, at Lambeau Field still wearing the Rodgers jersey. So there's going to be some hurt feelings. I mean, you know, you want your favorite player to start and end his career with your favorite team. So I think initially there'll probably be some hurt feelings. There'll probably be some people that are upset. But in the end, when they look back about it, they can't be anything but happy and appreciative of the guy.
Yeah. Trey, what do you think? Yeah.
Well, I think 10 years from now, that's probably going to be the mindset.
Yeah.
But I think even Aaron would say we didn't do enough. I mean, he's a four-time MVP. They've had, you know, numerous opportunities as a number one seed. And the only time they won the Super Bowl, they snuck in as a wild card. You know, in Super Bowl 45, when they went in as the sixth seed, I believe, that year, and then went on that magical run. I think anybody looking at the Hall of Fame, first ballot Hall of Fame talent that Aaron Rodgers has at quarterback would say one Super Bowl appearance. One. I mean, at least Favre, they went to two. They lost one and they won one. I think that they did not maximize the time with Aaron Rodgers. And now let's take it one step further. The reason Davante Adams is a Raider is because of the contract that Aaron got from the Packers and demanded and had every right to demand, because after back-to-back MVP seasons, after they moved up in the first round to take his eventual replacement, Jordan Love, he's like, really? Screw you guys. This is how well I'm going to play. So he earned that contract and they had to pay him. But now paying Aaron Rodgers cost you Devontae Adams, and now Aaron Rodgers is gone. I think that's going to be bitter for Packer fans to say, well, wait a minute. We paid you, and it cost us Devontae Adams, and then you came back to this ridiculous contract, which was never a four-year contract. The last 2 years were just fluffer nutter. You know what I mean? It's just – it's Happy Meal toys. Just things to spice it up. And now you don't make the playoffs, and now you're gone? Like, I think that's going to take some time to sink in for Packer fans to be okay with that. 10 years from now, they'll think of the great run they had with Aaron Rodgers. But right now, they're like, well, damn. Well, now what do we have?
Yeah. Well, look, I'm sure Devontae Adams is going to be fine. He's got Jimmy G. I mean, what more could you ask for a quarterback? But
without Darren Waller.
That being said, Packers fans, let us know in the comments. We're live. All right. We're ready to take your comments, read them on air. Let us know how you feel about the situation. Two times in 15 years, a legendary quarterback ends up in the Big Apple, coming from the great metropolitan area of Green Bay, Wisconsin. So on that note, let's stay in the NFC North, because like,
by the way, real quickly, before we move on.
Yeah.
That's something that, and Tony, I'd love to get your thoughts on this. You know, as Mark Murphy, the Packers president, once said about Aaron Rodgers, he's a complicated fella.
Yeah.
Complicated fellas tend to not handle New York media well.
Yep.
Randy Johnson with the Yankees. Remember that? How'd that work out? So this is going to be like, it's not going to be rainbows and roses and sunshine for Aaron Rodgers in New York. They're going to say that he's going to be asked different questions in a different way in New York. Tony, that, I think that's the nicest way I can say it. And he has to learn to deal with that.
It's all going to come down to winning or losing. I mean, I think the worst thing that could happen to Aaron Rodgers is the team. There's going to be a honeymoon period, but if the team starts off 1-4, 1-5 or something like that, it's not going to be a pretty scene. And remember, everyone's praising the Jets for trading for Aaron Rodgers. They, as we've talked on this program multiple times, they still need 3-4 offensive linemen. So there's a good chance in the early part of the season, Aaron Rodgers gets beat up. If he wins, he's going to, you know, he's the king now. If he wins, he will continue to be king. If he doesn't win, you know, there's going to be a lot of pressure. And like you said, you know, the New York City metropolitan area is not Green Bay, Wisconsin. You can't hide here. And, you know, they will ask Richard Todd what happened. Go back, ask Richard Todd what happened. And Richard Todd was a fraction of the quarterback of Aaron Rodgers. But if he wins, it will be okay. If he doesn't win, because the expectations now are huge. I don't believe that you're a Super Bowl contender, but the expectations are huge. He's got to live up to those expectations.
Well, just ask Zach Wilson. Like, do you need to take credit? No, it's not my fault. I mean, like that'll happen. And what Tony, and we'll move on after this. What Tony said is so important. The expectation is Brady in Tampa or Peyton in Denver. That's it.
Yeah.
Like that's it.
You can't be Wilson in Denver, right?
No. The expectation is we're going to have a Peyton Manning in Denver type run or a Tom Brady in Tampa type run. Anything less than that, this will not be considered a success.
And let me add one more thing. You know, the Jets are not the only team in town. You got the Giants who, you know, they're basically in the backdrop, but the Giants have done a magnificent job the past couple of weeks. So it's the expectations are huge, and they're going to be compared to what the Giants are doing week in and week out.
Especially with Daniel Jones having that contract, comparing the two of those. So we'll see how that plays out. Let's stay in the NFC North, because like I said at the top of the show, the number one overall pick has changed hands, and no one is even talking about it right now, but it has extremely huge ramifications for what we've seen in the early days of free agency, especially with the Chicago Bears. They had the number one pick, they traded down, they're now slated to pick at number 9, and they've loaded up on some significant defensive and offensive talent in these early days. Trey, what are the moves that the Chicago Bears have made that you're pretty fond of right now?
Well, it's not only the moves, there's a plan here, okay? And like for so long there, what was the plan in Chicago? For so long, what was the plan with the Jets, right? What Ryan Poles has done, coming over from Kansas City, by the way, a franchise that knows how to build around a quarterback, they're following the model of the Buffalo Bills, and they're following the model of the Philadelphia Eagles this past offseason. They believe they have a franchise quarterback in Justin Fields. The only way to find out whether or not he's a franchise quarterback is to give him the opportunity to be one. So when Poles not only trades the number one pick for more draft picks, and he gets, you know, a Nate Davis, they pick up Tremaine Edmonds from the Bills, who's going to sort of settle into that Roquan Smith role when they let him go. And by the way, they get Tremaine Edmonds for a lot less money than Roquan Smith. And that's going to work out, I think, for them. And they get protection up front. They get TJ Edwards. But most importantly, they get Justin Fields a weapon. Mm. Now, the Raiders apparently made the same sort of offer to the Bears, but through Darren Waller as opposed to a wide receiver. And Ryan Poles, to me, smartly said, thanks, but no thanks. Because yeah. I think they have a serviceable tight end. Not a great tight end, but a serviceable tight end. In Cole Kmet, what you need for Justin Fields is someone to open up the defense, a lid lifter, a zone buster. And that's what DJ Moore is. If Justin Fields is going to reach his potential, he needs to have weapons he can work with. And DJ Moore is exactly what they needed. Okay. So now you have 3 years to find out what Justin Fields is with a true one wide receiver. And now you have all these other picks. I wouldn't be surprised with that number nine pick that they trade back again, because what they need is more. They don't need a player. They need more players. So when you get the extra pick in 2024, you get the extra pick, the first round pick and a second round pick. When you get all these extra picks and the 61st pick this year, they need to have a draft, Tony, kind of like the Chiefs had this past year when they got starters across the board in the first round, the second round, the third round, the seventh round, okay? They got players that they can build around on rookie contracts. And if you're going to make Justin Fields as good as he can be, and I have no idea if he's going to be Josh Allen. I have no idea if he's going to be Jalen Hurts. But the only way he can be either one of those guys is if you surround him with enough talent. And to me, it's not just about trading the number one pick. It's understanding what you have to do to build a franchise around a quarterback that has the potential to be a franchise quarterback.
Yeah. Tony, what are your thoughts on this move and specifically how it impacts the rest of the draft? Now we know Carolina is going to be going number one, but what does this mean for the Bears? Who could they be, you know, hoping to get in?
By the way, real quickly, I'd love to get Tony on this. The Bears have already sort of intimated, we may not take it number one, which tells me, Tony, that I don't think they're in love with either of those quarterbacks. And if someone loves them way more than they do, they might move back and take the other guy.
You're talking about Carolina.
Yeah.
Tony, let's stay on that for a second.
Let's go with the Bears first. I thought it was a massive trade for the Bears. I mean, if I'm a Bears fan, I am ecstatic. You got draft capital. You got a number one receiver. Now you've got to build the lines of scrimmage, because what Trey said about Justin Fields is right on the money, but you got to protect him. And they need offensive tackles. They need their help on the offensive line, and they need help on the defensive line. And, you know, it's nice to have all this draft capital, but you have to use that draft capital correctly, something the Raiders didn't do when they made those trades and got all those picks. It'll be interesting to see if they trade back for additional picks. And I'm just going to throw this out there. They've got additional picks. They've got multiple first-round selections coming up in the future. You know what? If Justin Fields doesn't pan out, well, you've got all this these extra picks, all this draft capital. If there is a quarterback of your liking in the 2024 draft or beyond, you can use that draft capital to potentially move up and take that signal caller if it doesn't work out with Justin Fields.
People love next year's quarterback class. Tony, let's stay with you and flip it to the other side of the trade. Right. On Monday, you broke your own story, and you'd said that it was down to two for the Carolina Panthers, C.J. Stroud or Anthony Richardson, with that number one pick. What can you tell us about that report and where the Panthers currently stand with that pick?
Well, let's take a little bit of a hedge. I didn't say it's down to – I said those are the two favorites in the clubhouse right now.
It's basically
C.J. Stroud with that number one pick. That's one of the reasons why they moved up. Now, I think what Trey said is true. If they can move down a few slots and feel they get one of those guys, that may happen. I think that's a very slight chance. I had heard this last Friday, and then I developed it through the weekend, and I basically got the confirmation that I needed – from the same person who, oh, by the way, almost a year ago told me that Trayvon Walker was going to be the first pick of the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Which, by the way, I should add, Trey, you did an interview with Adam Pullman over at Caesar Sports, and he said that report actually moved the betting lines.
Correct. Big time.
Number one overall. So, Tony, yep. The same sources who's given you this information, who gave you Trayvon Walker?
He was one of the sources. You go to a couple of multiple different sources. Now, throughout the weekend, I tried to have two questions answered, which I could not. And that is, how much say is the owner going to have in this pick? Mm. I mean, if Fitterer and Frank Reich are pushing for C.J. Stroud and Tepper says, I want Richardson, is it going to be Richardson? Was not able to find that out, may never be able to find that out. And I also wanted to find out is Bryce Young of Alabama out of the conversation at this point in time? If Alabama has their pro day, if Bryce Young has a phenomenal individual workout, does that put him back in the conversation with Anthony Richardson and C.J. Stroud? I was not able to find that out, but it just seems right now, if the draft was held, you know, within a week or two, those are the two guys who they're looking at, and one of those two guys will be selected with the first pick of the draft.
Yeah. By the way, real quickly, Tony, I find it fascinating that they're that high on Richardson.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's a real boom or bust, right? I mean, that's a big swing. I mean, I know the Colts are hesitant to think about him at four, let alone someone taking him at one.
You are preaching to the choir with that one. That's for sure. But, you know, listen, when you talk to scouts, you talk to people in the league, when they look at a prospect, they say, what does he do well? And you look at Anthony Richardson, he's got the size, he's got the athleticism, he's got the arm strength. You know, he is basically, you're right, he is the ultimate boom or bust type of prospect. Frank Reich is looking at him saying, listen, look at this guy's upside potential. Haven't seen a quarterback with this upside potential in who knows how long. I will coach him to be a fantastic quarterback in next level. I will coach him to be that franchise quarterback that he potentially can. I will tell you this. I talked to a lot of people who interviewed him, and they were surprised by how much he didn't know. I mean, he's got such a learning curve as far as, the NFL is concerned, being a quarterback's concern. He doesn't have a big body of work. And you're absolutely right there. And I've said this all along. He's got a massive bust factor to him. And it's surprising to me. I could see C.J. Stroud. But it's surprising to me that the Carolina Panthers are so high on him with that first pick of the draft.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I did an interview with Vince Young before the 2005 draft. You know, he'd just come off that incredible Rose Bowl performance at the University of Texas, mm-hmm. taking down USC, still considered one of the greatest college football games of all time. And I did an interview with him on NFL Live, and I said, well, you know, everything was great. And I said, hey, let me just take you through what I'm hearing from some people. And I said, one of the concerns they have is that you – basically spend 90% of your plays at Texas in the shotgun. Well, that's not going to happen in the NFL. You're going to be under center a lot. What's your reaction to that? And his first response was, well, it's pretty much the same. And I was like, no, it isn't. And sometimes it's not what you know, it's what you don't know that concerns you. Now, to be fair, the game has evolved where it is a lot more in shotgun nowadays than it was in 2005.
Right.
But those kind of things are not to be taken trivially, right? Sometimes it's the little things that create the biggest problems for a lot of these guys transitioning from the college game to the NFL. And again, to be fair, the NFL game is much more similar now to the wide open offenses of the college than it was in 2005. But when you hear Tony say something like that, there's so much validity and merit into it, based on things that I've seen happen time after time.
Yeah, to see his name floated out there, Tony, in your report as a potential favorite for the number one overall pick. I want to make sure I'm clear on that. I also paused because, you know, Anthony Richardson, you know, probably the fastest mover in terms of media coverage of the quarterback prospects. Would you say that that's fair, Tony?
Hands down. It's because he jumped through the roof. And he ran super fast. I mean, two qualities that you really don't need at the quarterback position. And because it's
Tom Brady.
Exactly.
And because Tom Brady is still running the 40, by the way. He's still
Peyton Manning, you know, still these guys.
And because it was televised, everybody fell in love with these Olympian type workouts. But you know, he's a thrower who needs to become a passer. And what concerns me really is the lack of body of work. I mean, he was a full-time starter this year at Florida, couldn't beat Vanderbilt, got pounded by Florida State. I believe he completed 33% of his passes. It's not like he's a one-year starter that had incredible success carried that Florida Gator team on its shoulders, you know, through the SEC. Wasn't like that at all. And, you know, in my book, as far as when you evaluate quarterbacks, you got to look at the body of work and the success that they have had.
All right. Well, look, we'll see how that plays out. And like Trey said, and Tony, you said, you know, like Dumb and Dumber. So you're saying there's a chance. We'll see if Carolina actually holds on to that pick and makes it at number one. There's still plenty of time between now and the draft. And as we always say, stranger things have certainly happened. But look, everything we've talked about to this point, whether it be Aaron Rodgers, the trading of the number one overall pick, it all comes down and back to the quarterback position. That's what this NFL is built on and what matters. And two signings happened in the free agency market, the illegal tampering period. Jimmy Garoppolo, as we mentioned, signed with the Las Vegas Raiders. He's now projected to be their starting quarterback. And today, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers signed Baker Mayfield. Tony, I know you have thoughts on what the Jimmy G signing means for the quarterback market and free agency at whole. What are your thoughts on that particular signing?
Well, it's a natural fit. I mean, going back to Josh McDaniel, it is a natural fit. Garoppolo is, you know, he's not a sure thing. But I think from a Raiders perspective, I mean, you kind of killed two birds with one stone in the sense that now they have their quarterback. With that seventh pick, they can go offensive line, and they need offensive line something terribly. So you're going to look at Paris Johnson, the best left tackle prospect in this year's draft with that selection. I don't think they're going to take a quarterback. I think there's no way they take a quarterback at seven. Just keep this in mind. I mean, if you look at the Garoppolo contract, I believe there's an out after the first year. And McDaniels talked about having a long-term prospect, a long-term player at the position. Last week, I mentioned Aiden O'Connell from Purdue. And the Raiders were Aiden O'Connell during the Purdue Pro Day. So you look, they take Paris Johnson in the first round. Day two of Aiden O'Connell of Purdue's there. Definitely fits a system, is a Josh McDaniel type of quarterback, and he could be the long-term answer down the road.
Now, Trey, you mentioned that the Raiders were in a little bit on trading for that number one overall pick, offering Darren Waller in a package. Also reports that they made a call to Aaron Rodgers, but knew that they probably weren't going to get him, so they pivoted from that. It looks like the Raiders have tried to go both routes of the quarterback procurement phase, but ended on Jimmy G. What are your thoughts on how they got here?
Well, look, obviously there's a familiarity between Josh McDaniel and Jimmy G from their days in Florida, right? Somebody's got a phone call, but anyway, that's Josh McDaniel inquiring about what he thinks they should do.
There you go.
Josh, what are your thoughts on the QB market?
Look, Jimmy G, who Jimmy G is, isn't changing. Okay. Right. He's not going to suddenly be a different version of himself. Jimmy G is going to be a guy that's going to help you win some games. Is going to occasionally make the mistake and you're like, how did that happen? But more often than not, you'll be okay with Jimmy Garoppolo. And even with the loss of Waller, they still have Fabian Moreau, who has come on and really become a really good tight end. They still have Davante Adams. They still have Hunter Renfrow. My God, they got to figure out something with Josh Jacobs after the year he put up. But again, at the end of the day, quarterback, for me, was never the problem with the Raiders. The problem has been the defense. Like, since Derek Carr got there in 2014, statistically, over that time frame, the Raiders, no matter who their coach and their quarterback has been, have been dead last in almost every major defensive category. So Jimmy G isn't changing his stripes. Jimmy G is who Jimmy G is just now without a really, really good tight end in Darren Waller. So for the fortunes of the Raiders to change dramatically, quite frankly, I think it has nothing to do with Jimmy Garoppolo.
Interesting. And what about the Baker Mayfield signing in Tampa Bay? The one-year deal, but do you think there's potential for him to get the job long-term?
Well, right. I mean, look, we talked about this. You know, the Bucs said, well, of course, Kyle Trask is our starter. He was their only option. Okay. He was the only quarterback they had on their roster. Now they have another quarterback. And I would be stunned, barring injury, which is certainly possible with Baker, that Baker doesn't start week one as the quarterback for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Hmm. Still young enough to salvage what
2018, bro. 2018. Yeah. 5 years ago.
Exciting start to that career. Okay, let's move on. We've talked about the quarterback position a lot. Let's pivot to another big story from today, I believe, that changes positions but stays on offense, and that's at the running back position. For years, it feels like, Trey, you and I have talked about need for the Cowboys to commit to Tony Pollard as the focus of that offense. Well, Ezekiel Elliott era in Dallas is apparently done. That doesn't mean he doesn't resign there for less money, but they have cut him. What are your thoughts on this move, and is it too late?
Well, I mean, it's too late for the Cowboys to be everything they could be, because the reason Amari Cooper is a Cleveland Brown is because they gave the contract to Ezekiel Elliott, right? I mean, that's all of this. So the Cowboys are paying the price for the contract they gave their running back before they gave their contract to their quarterback, which cost them their wide receiver, who had incredible chemistry with their quarterback. So this is all these weird things coming to fruition. I will say I do like what the I do like what the Cowboys are doing defensively, and obviously that's a strength of theirs with the way that they played last year and getting Stephon Gilmore. But Ezekiel Elliott became a short yardage back and a goal line back. That's not what you pay someone $16 million a year for in the NFL, okay? And Tony Pollard is the reason that he became that. Tony Pollard is more explosive. Look, Ezekiel Elliott still has value. He has value for the Cowboys if he comes back. He has value for other teams, but that value is in a different role than it was in 2016, 2017, 2018. He was the man. He's no longer the man. And the weird part about the Cowboys was they gave him the man contract when they had already started splitting time between him and Pollard. And that's why that contract, Tony, became such a disaster for the Cowboys. And now Ezekiel has to decide, you know, it's like the Austin Eckler thing, which I find very interesting. Austin Eckler's a touchdown machine, but he's a 28-year-old running back. Like, who is going to make a big trade for Austin Eckler to give up a bunch to bring him in that the Chargers would want to let him go? Look, you're a great player, Austin Eckler. Don't get me wrong. You are, I've said it before, you remain my spirit animal. I love the way you play, but I just don't know what the market is for an Austin Eckler, and I don't know what the market is for an Ezekiel Elliott, Tony.
Yeah, I mean, listen, go back to the report from the Senior Bowl that we had. I mean, Pollard was expected to be franchised, and they were going to try and get Ezekiel Elliott to take a huge pay cut. I don't know what happened there, but I guess obviously it didn't work out. Now he's cut. And the fact is, he does have value, but he's not the type of back that teams want these days. He's not a creative ball carrier. He's not a guy that can stretch the corner. He can't turn the perimeter. I mean, the best days are behind him. And you're right in the sense that the timing of that contract was so strange. I guess they didn't know what they had in Pollard, who was really developed into a fine back. But, you know, these bigger downhill backs, they don't have the same value that they had in the league 20, 25 years ago. And that's what Ezekiel Elliott has turned into.
Tony, does this put the Cowboys in the running back market during the draft?
I mean, maybe late. I would be shocked if they go, if they look at a running back within the first 4 to 5 rounds. And maybe if a highly rated ball carrier falls into their laps, they've got to consider it. But you're going to be paying Tony Pollard a lot of money. You want to add some depth there. So maybe in the late rounds.
Okay. Well, look, let's switch sides of the ball now, because another big trade happened regarding a defensive player, and that's Jalen Ramsey getting traded from the Rams to the Dolphins. This trade going down on Sunday, because why wait for the league new year to start, which is only 36 minutes old? Let's do everything before then. So Jalen Ramsey, now a Miami Dolphin, in free agency's tampering period. The Dolphins also signed what I think is an incredible signing in David Long Jr. Trey, what are your thoughts on the Dolphins getting Vic Fangio some toys to play with as he takes over a new defense?
It's fantastic. Look, it feels like the AFC East is this year's AFC West from a year ago, right? Like, Aaron Rodgers going to the Jets. Alan Lazard's going to be there. Mercedes Lewis probably going to be there. Randall Cobb going to be there. You have, David Long and everybody else and Jalen Ramsey that the Dolphins had. and people are going crazy. And I've seen people say, oh, the AFC East is going to be fire this year. Oh, and by the way, Juju just signed with the Belichick, with the Patriots for 3 years, $33 million, which is probably a one-year deal, and we'll see. But, you know, so there's a lot of moving parts. By the way, I can't wait to have Bill Belichick have the TikTok talk with Juju Smith-Schuster. I would pay a lot of money for a live stream of that conversation. But it feels like the AFC East is this year's what we thought about the AFC West. And I bring that up as a cautionary tale to everybody. Because, you know, and I was as guilty of this as anyone. Every AFC West game should be on primetime. It's going to be epic. It's going to be crazy. 6-0 for Kansas City, swept the damn division. Patrick Mahomes has still never lost a road division game in his career. Why do I say this? Because even with Aaron Rodgers going to the Jets, Josh Allen is the best quarterback in the AFC East. And I don't think it's particularly close. So if Josh Allen is there and Dawson Knox is still there and Stephon Diggs is still there, they're still the team to beat in the AFC East. If Tua's healthy for a season, Miami's fantastic. But we all know that's the biggest issue. It has nothing to do with talent at this point. It has to do with can he stay on the field, and that's a very legitimate concern. And then you have Aaron Rodgers, as we said, going to the Jets. And as Tony pointed out weeks ago, they may need four starting offensive linemen. Four. Okay, that's a lot, no matter what you have in Garrett Wilson. And if Breece Hall comes back and all these wide receivers and the defense is as suffocating as it was a year ago, that's a lot. Okay, so it all sounds great now, but when push comes to shove, I am always going to lean on the best quarterback in the division. And to me, that is still Josh Allen.
You know, when you can get a veteran cornerback, it's much, much easier getting one of those guys to slide in there rather than develop a younger cornerback. And as we go through the process up to the draft, I mean, you look at the Miami Dolphins' needs, running back and cornerback. And the fact is this, they gave up what? A third-round pick for Jalen Ramsey? So you got to look at the Dolphins. If they could keep Tua healthy as another team in the AFC East that is in win-now mode. With this move, I thought it was a terrific move for the Dolphins. It helped shore up their defense. They didn't give away much for a guy that is one of the best at his positions, just as long as he can stay healthy, and it fills a need moving towards the draft.
Yeah, you know, I did a video for PFN that should be coming out soon too, asking, you know, answering the question, does Jalen Ramsey make the Dolphins a contender? One of the things I said is, they were probably already a contender without him. I think what he brings to the Dolphins, and I love both of your thoughts on this, is he now adds an extra level of expectation for them to do more than just make the playoffs like they did a year ago. I would argue that his presence now irrationally gives fans the idea that these guys are now Super Bowl contenders, when really that's going to be up to the health of Tua Tagovailoa and not necessarily the presence of a Jalen Ramsey.
Yeah, you're 100% accurate. And it's weird. Think about this. And the Rams wouldn't change it because they won a Super Bowl. But they gave up two ones to get Jalen Ramsey, and they got back a third. I mean, that's, you know, I mean, you got to throw in the ring, and I understand that. But that's not a lot. And the Rams had to do it because, obviously, they have their – it's coming home to roost. It took a while, but it's coming home to roost, all those picks that they've sort of – walk out the door since they took Jared Goff number one overall in 2016. I'm talking about first round picks specifically. So look, the Dolphins, they're really good. There's not a lot of weaknesses on the team, except, and you'll hold your breath. You literally hold your breath every time he goes on the field. And I'm talking about the quarterback. It's not about ability. It's about availability. And that is going to be the concern going forward.
Like Bill Parcells is famous for saying, a most important ability for a player is availability. So we'll see how that plays out. But let's stay – oh, I'm sorry, Tony, go ahead.
2 points on Jalen Ramsey. You know, I think the X factor here is Vic Fangio and how he's going to use Jalen Ramsey. Sure. Because, you know, they not only got a real good cornerback, they got an outstanding defensive coordinator. Agree 1,000% that, you know, their season will come down to the health of Tua. Let's not forget – they did sign Mike White to a decent
salary. Yeah, really good backup. That's a great point, Tony. That's a great point.
Mike White is going to be better than Teddy Bridgewater. He's going to be better than Skylar Thompson. You know, he's a guy who comes in and he competes, he plays, had some success. There were times Zach Wilson was so bad. Jet fans, you know, were screaming for Mike White. He was the quarterback of the future. I don't agree with that, but he is a good guy to have backing up Tua.
And that's a crucial position on this team, given the things we've talked about. But let's stay on the defensive side of the ball. Tony, Jalen Carter, seen by most to be the top defensive prospect in the draft, either him or Will Anderson, depending on who you talk to. I know you have your own opinion on that. But he had his pro day. And we got the news when we were all together at the scouting combine. We did our show the day the news broke about Jalen Carter's arrest warrant. It doesn't seem to be getting better for him on the field, Tony. What can you tell us about the performance at his pro day?
You know, not just the best defensive prospect, the number one prospect in the whole entire draft. So the pro day was a disaster. Jim Nagy, our friend from the Senior Bowl, reported early on that he was just going to do position drills, and he was 9 pounds heavier today's weigh-in than he was at the combine barely 2 weeks ago. And the position drills were a disaster. Wow. As I said on Twitter, it was a poor, poor workout. He was huffing and puffing. He couldn't finish the workout. He was bent over. I'm told it was just a disaster. And I heard from the Detroit Lions. The Detroit Lions, who hold the ninth pick of the draft, who are desperate in need of a the Detroit Lions, who hold the sixth pick of the draft, I apologize, who desperately need a defensive tackle, were just completely turned off by him. Now, does this mean Jalen Carter is going to drop off? No, it doesn't mean that. But if you're looking, if you have a list of pros and cons, and you look at, you know, his terrific college career, how he dominated games, and then you look at the offseason, this is just another check in the con aisle against Jalen Carter. There's still more to be played out, but it's headed in the wrong direction for Jalen Carter.
Yeah, it's like the old planes, trains, and automobiles. You're going the wrong way. You know, but and listen, this is, he's a young kid. He's young. You know what I mean? I'm not making any excuses. I'm just saying sometimes there's a maturation process that needs to kick in, and you hope that that's the situation here with him.
Yeah. There's a difference. Quentin Williams, when he was drafted, he wasn't considered immature. He was just considered a little bit naive.
Goofy.
Exactly. I mean, with Jalen Carter, he's just doing dumb things. And the fact is, this is, you know, there's a limited amount of time for teams to come up with their final evaluation, put a final grade on a player. And Jalen Carter is making it easier and easier for teams to knock him down the draft board.
Yeah,
the problem that Jalen Carter is going to face is he's running out of opportunities. You had the combine, that didn't go well. You had your pro day, that didn't go well. Now it's up to the individual workouts at the team facilities to see if he can hopefully turn it around. We'll see. Not looking great so far. Want to pivot here for a second. I want to talk about is back to the NFL for a moment and what the Kansas City Chiefs are doing. Trey, we've talked a lot on this show about Brett Veach and how he's an excellent team builder. It looks like he's playing money ball with the offensive line. And what many were afraid of, he was going to lose out on Orlando Brown, Andrew Wiley. He then goes in and gets a 25-year-old elite tackle. What are your thoughts on the moves the Kansas City Chiefs are making?
Yeah, listen, this is why the Kansas City Chiefs are as successful as they are. And I want to be clear. It starts with Patrick Mahomes, Andy Reid, and Travis Kelce. We all know that. But if you're paying those guys, and Chris Jones, if you're paying those guys, then you need to find value pieces everywhere else, right? Orlando Brown and the Chiefs got together, and it was pretty clear that the Chiefs had one idea of his value and Orlando had another. Well, if he was the best left tackle available in free agency and he hasn't signed yet, that tells you something, okay?
Yeah.
And Adam Schefter had a great report yesterday on NFL Live. A good show, by the way. I've heard, good things about that show for a lot of years.
Do you know anything about the show? Are you familiar?
Not a thing. Not a thing. And he basically said around the league, while Orlando Brown considers himself a left tackle, the league considers him a right tackle. Right. And look, Andrew Wiley just got a really nice contract for being a right tackle. And it's not as cut in stone as it used to be, you know, blindside rush and all that kind of stuff, because people switch up all the time. It's not as big of a thing. But they just got, in my opinion, a better tackle in Juwan Taylor for less money, who they are going to move to the left side. Not everybody can do it. But I think Juwan Taylor can, and I believe that Brett Veach has done his due diligence to for him to believe he can. They're going to move him to left. And now you have really not much of a market for Orlando Brown. And potentially, there's the potential that they could actually get, you know, everyone thought they might keep Wiley, who went on to the Commanders, where he's going to be reunited with Eric Bieniemy, and they would lose Orlando Brown. The potential exists for them actually to get Orlando Brown back on a much lesser contract, or they just go into position battle in camp. And Lucas Niang, whom you pointed out so correctly, Brett, on Twitter the other day, that after the Andrew Wiley tackle eligible play, he can't be ineligible in the next play. So they had to take him off the field for what was a go-ahead touchdown. Okay? That's how much confidence they had in Niang. Niang was the starter
before the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Niang was the starter before he got hurt. Now, I know what people are going to say. He's always hurt. And that is correct. But that doesn't mean he's always going to be hurt. Okay? He's had a little bit of bad luck. The talent that is there for Lucas Niang to be a really good tackle in the NFL. And there might be the possibility that somehow Orlando Brown actually comes back.
Yeah, all those things are on the table. Full disclosure, just so keeping everyone on the same page, I have trained Lucas Niang technique-wise for the last 8 years. So I'm very familiar with him. So take everything I say next with a grain of salt when I say this.
Or just say it that you are not completely unbiased here.
That's correct, yeah. So yeah. Lucas, what's interesting about this this move and what this says about him and this idea that he's always hurt, to be clear, Lucas Niang has only had one injury as a professional athlete, and it was when he was asked to switch and play left tackle against the Cincinnati Bengals in his first year and was going up against their edge rusher, and he ruptured his patellar tendon. That is not a chronic injury that happens, right? That's correct. Not something you have to be worried about recurring. The reason why there's this moniker of injury issues with Lucas is he sat out his rookie year during the COVID pandemic, unrelated to physical injury. So I just want to make that clear. So we know that. But to your point, Lucas will be given the opportunity to start. He's penciled in as the starter. Brett Veach said this was coming at the combine, if anyone was listening. But that doesn't mean competition is not going to be added. If they can get Orlando Brown back and have him and Juwan Taylor on the same line, they easily have the best offensive line in the NFL. The situation that I would love to get your thoughts on regarding this is the difference in type of player from Orlando Brown to Juwan Taylor. Tony, I know you scouted both of these guys during their draft years. Juwan Taylor is a much better athlete than Orlando Brown is. And Orlando Brown struggled in Kansas City with speed. Do you think that is the impetus for the change here?
Juwan Taylor is a good problem to have because you're going to slide him into right tackle. He did play some left tackle at Florida. You think he can play the left tackle spot. Orlando Brown, if you remember, he had an awful combine. I mean, it was just disastrous.
It was one of the worst I've ever seen, yeah.
Right. I mean, his broad jump, he basically just fell forward and they marked it. And that was the measurement. That's how bad it was. And people were surprised that he was selected where he did. And he's been relatively successful. But it has to be the fact that you got to be able to get a guy that's athletic enough to get out off the edge, to use his hands, play with body control, a decent athlete, to protect the edge. That's what Lucas Niang was at TCU. That is what Juwan Taylor had showed at Florida. Juwan Taylor fell out of the first round because of injury concerns. That's why he made a massive drop on draft the year he was drafted when people thought he was going to be a first round selection. It turned out he hasn't been. He's been healthy. He's been able to. He's been durable. And I think this has got to be a big blow to the Jacksonville Jaguars, who, you know, we're riding him on his rookie contract, because you got a guy there, Trevor Lawrence, who you know, your potential franchise quarterback, who you also have to protect. Now they got to go fill that spot.
Yeah. And to both of your points, you've both brought this up, this idea that Juwan Taylor is a good enough athlete to switch sides. They now have two tackles in Juwan Taylor and Lucas Niang, both capable of playing both tackle spots. Right. As I mentioned, when Orlando Brown was hurt in 2021, it was Lucas Niang who was the starting right tackle that they moved over to replace him. So they love versatility on the offensive line. And look, giving Andy Heck, the offensive line coach in Kansas City, an elite athlete to work with. He's the best offensive line coach in football. And I, again, saying that with some level of bias, but I believe you ask anybody, they'll say it's true. So Kansas City really making a fantastic move, showed up the one question we had about this roster. Brett Veach gets it done again with more moves coming. Talk about the Denver Broncos staying in this division because they also fortified the trenches. They signed Ben Powers from the Baltimore Ravens, and they stole Mike McGlinchey, the right tackle from San Francisco, right out from under the nose of the Chicago Bears, who looked like they were going to get it done. Trey, is this what needs to be done to help Russell Wilson, or are they focusing on the wrong part of their roster?
Well, look, you always want to upgrade your offensive line. I don't think that is talked about enough. I think the two best offensive lines we played on Super Bowl Sunday, right? I mean, the Eagles and the Chiefs, I mean, they were great. And, you know, a lot of people said, how would the Chiefs O-line hold up against that Eagles pass rush that had 70 sacks? Well, they didn't give up one, okay? So the offensive line always matters. But, you know, people always talk about Russell Wilson and the sacks. A lot of those are on Russell Wilson and the way he plays. And I get it, Captain Danger, whatever he is, I don't know, you know, be invincible, whatever it is, I don't know. At the end of the day, a lot of sacks that Russell Wilson takes are not on the offensive line, they're on Russell Wilson. And the best way to eliminate a bunch of the sacks is not to upgrade the offensive line, but Russell has to adjust a little bit. Is that possible at this stage in his career? I'm not sure. Unlimited, Mr. Unlimited, that's what it was. Unlimited was the cringeworthy post from a couple of years ago. Look, it's great to upgrade your offensive line, but if your quarterback isn't aware of those things in front of him, those sacks are still going to happen. The Broncos did a nice job, and McGlinchey is really good, and who they got from the Baltimore is really good. But at the end of the day, Russell Wilson needs to adjust. And that's the way you're going to get better play from him and less sacks in Denver.
Yeah. And I want to give a shout out to our producer, Ryo. You said that guy from Baltimore that they got, and he hit that Ben Powers picture.
Thank you.
Perfect. Yeah. Great job, Ryo. All right. So look, before we segue, because look, it is free agency and we are coming up on the NFL draft. We can't forget about that. So we have our position focus to go through. But before we do, I want to give a shout out to some of the guys help us pay the bills. And the first one, Trey, is a company I think you're familiar with. That would be Caesar Sportsbook.
Heard of
them. Bet on the draft. You can bet on team futures. You can bet on a whole host of things. And if you haven't done so yet, place your first bet with Caesar Sportsbook. And here's why. If you do and you lose, you will get 100% of your stake back as a free bet, all the way up to $1,250. So to be clear, you can bet over $1,000 risk-free, and if you lose, get it back in the form of a free bet. Additionally, win or lose, you're going to get 1,000 rewards credits and 1,000 tier credits that can be redeemed at any Caesars location, hotel, casino, or otherwise. All you have to do is place your first bet using promo code PFNCZR. That's PFNCZR. Go place your first bet at Caesar Sportsbook. And if you're more into the daily fantasy space, Underdog Fantasy is another company you should be checking out. The season is never over there. They're already doing best ball drafts. Make sure you go get into that. All you have to do there is use promo code PFN. Download the app, type in the promo code, and begin drafting. You can start drafting the current draft prospects now onto your best ball rosters and start playing fantasy football today with Underdog Fantasy and promo code PFN. Okay, bringing us to our segment and what we're hearing in our position focus as we get closer and closer to the NFL draft. The first position I want to talk about with you, Tony, is the tight end position. This is a class that a lot of people have a lot of interesting thoughts on. I want to hear yours as we go into this third week of March.
Oh, I don't know if there's interesting is one thing. This is a terrific group of tight ends. I mean, you're not going to have a guy that goes in the top half of round one, not a top 10 pick, but this is a group of tough pass catching, blocking tight ends who have a big body of work on the college level, who went to the combine and performed better than expectations. You start off with Michael Mayer of Notre Dame, 6'4" and a half, 249 pounds, a real grinder, a guy who's a terrific blocker. He makes a difficult catch with multiple defenders draped on his back. Goes to the combine. People think he's not going to run under 4.8. He runs a 4.70, a tenth faster than people thought. Luke Musgrave of Oregon State, 6'6", 252 pounds, a guy who was injured during the season, decided to go to the participate in the Senior Bowl just because he missed playing football. He goes to the combine, runs a 4.61 at 252 pounds, 6'6", catches the ball extremely well. Sam LaPorta, one of my favorites, guy who has been a terrific tight end at Iowa for 3 years as a blocker and as a pass catcher. 6'3", 245 pounds, runs a 4.59 at the combine. That was a more than a tenth faster than scouts expected. Dalton Kincaid of Utah has not worked out because of an injury, has not worked out yet. But he was a guy who, when he was inserted into the starting lineup at Utah, just his game took off like many thought of. And then there's the runaway locomotive, Darnell Washington of Georgia, played at 280 pounds during the season, goes to the combine 264 pounds at 6'7". A lot of people think this is a guy who's a 4.8 guy, runs a 4.64. So yeah. You've got a half a dozen tight ends at the top. I didn't even mention Tucker Kraft of South Dakota State, Zach Kuntz of Old Dominion, who played half the season last year because he was injured. He was the best tight end at the combine, 6'7", 255 pounds, ran a 4.55, I believe it was a 41-inch vertical jump. This is a real good group of tight ends. When I look at my board, I got 8 tight ends that are going to be day one or day two picks, and I got an even dozen tight ends that will be off the board by the end of the fifth round. And usually you're only getting 10 to 11 tight ends selected in any draft.
What was interesting to me about Darnell Washington's combine, Tony, is he came in much lighter than he was reportedly playing at, but he did really well from what I could see in the blocking drills, especially the sled drill. That's always the question you want to know is if a player gains or loses weight, can they maintain their playing ability? Did you see the same thing from your end?
He caught the ball well, too. Yeah, I mean, he showed a lot of punch in the bag drills. He showed a lot of you know, explosiveness in the blocking drills. Blocking is not a problem for Darnell Washington, regardless of whether he's 280 pounds or he's 264 pounds. He is a dominant blocker. The question was foot speed. Is he going to be an effective receiver more than 8 to 10 yards off the field? And when he ran the 4.64 at the combine, people said, you know what? This guy, we're going to be able to use him in longer pass routes than we first thought.
Let's take a look at the next position we're going to put the focus on as we get closer to the draft. And this is a position that in the NFL, it seems by the year, either depending on who your coordinator is, either extremely valuable or not so valuable. And that's the safety position. What are you hearing about that position group as we get through this process?
Just the opposite of the tight end position. I mean, it's a very weak group. It starts off with Brian Branch, one of my favorites, who was a terrific safety at Alabama. Plays a safety position like a cornerback. He's got great ball skills, but he runs a 4.58 at the combine, which really is not going to help him, even though he is a terrific football player and he worked out with the cornerbacks at the combine. Sidney Brown of Illinois has been making a big dash up draft boards literally since the end of the season. I shouldn't say since the end of the season because he was terrific last year at Illinois, was one of probably the best and most consistent defender at the Senior Bowl, had a terrific combine. He's gone from a day three pick to the second round, but it really falls off the cliff after that. You got Jordan Battle from Alabama, who is your typical downhill safety. He's good in the short area, Jamal Adams type, if you will, not as highly rated as Jamal Adams. Corey Trice of Purdue, who was a cornerback at Purdue, but has got the size and playing style of a safety. I mean, after Brian Branch, who's going to be a first-round pick, Sidney Brown, who's going to be a second-round pick, you're talking about third, fourth rounders at the safety position. It's a very thin class. And unlike the tight ends, where they're multidimensional players, most of the safeties after you get your top two are basically primarily down the field, straight line defenders that you're not really going to want to line up in over the slot receiver in man coverage. They're more zone type of guys. So not a good safety class.
Trey, the value of the safety position seems to go up and down. We saw Jamal Adams get traded for 2 first-round picks, which seems unbelievable to think about just a couple years later. What are your thoughts about the position and how it translates to the NFL in today's modern game?
Well, you know, Jamal's problem is he's a box safety, right? Yeah. I mean, like he was basically a linebacker playing safety. Yeah. And that's fine, but those don't really work in the NFL anymore. You need to have guys that can cover. Okay. You need to find guys that can cover. And to Tony's point about some of those 40 times, that's problematic. Like, it's almost as if, you know, there was a time, remember those big safeties like David Fulcher and those, like Ronnie Lott and those kind of, those days are over, man. They don't exist anymore. So you've got to find guys that can cover, find guys that can, that have the ability to cover more than hit. And if they hit, great. And, you know, we saw some big hits on Super Bowl 57. But at the end of the day, those guys now have to be more of a coverage position than ever before. And it's just sort of this traditional evolution of the NFL. Things are changing. And if you can cover as a safety, you are a coveted prospect. But if you're a big hitter, that's not going to do as much good anymore.
And just to Trey's point, you know, you used to want your safeties to be 6'1", 6'2", 210, 212 pounds.
Right.
Now you don't mind if a safety's 5'9.5", 5'10", 190 pounds, if you can play him over the slot receiver and he's not going to be a liability, if he can go sideline to sideline and play and make plays when the ball's in the air.
Yeah, we're actually starting to see linebackers come in weighing in those two teens, 220s. They're starting to shed down too. And shout out to Joe Mannix watching us on YouTube, who brought up Jack Tatum as another example of an old school, you know.
there's a lot of things going on with Jack Tatum. I mean, I can promise you that. Way back.
And we do have a couple comments here in the comment section. Guys, I want to just put out there as a general rule for the Football Insider Show as we go through the draft. It's not yet time to ask, is Team X interested in player B in the NFL draft? Yeah. We're not there yet. So if you ask those questions and I don't get to it, that's why. I apologize. DJ Dirty J, guys, he's been with us since the beginning.
Since day one.
Day one guy, DJ Dirty J over on YouTube says, hey, someone needs to check on Jalen's mental health. Going what he went through at the combine, now coming into the pro day out of shape, you know, how's he doing mentally?
Go ahead, Dre. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just saying, that's why I sort of brought that up about a maturity thing. Like, he's dealing with a lot. Now, some of it is completely self-inflicted, let's be clear. But that's part of this maturity process, okay? Like, it's not that easy. Like, we look at – and this is when I did the draft all those years at ESPN, I tried to make people understand these are not commodities. This is not a product. It is a person. And there are things that – we cannot have any access to that are affecting them in outside pressures on what we expect them to do. So many fans and fans of football look at a player like a widget. Oh, this player is out. We insert this thing here and it's going to work like a new battery. Okay. Yep. There are so many external pressures, especially in this world of social media that we live in, that change that equation. So I'm not excusing anything. And I'm glad DJ brought that up. I'm just saying those are real-time factors you have to consider when you see some of the things these guys are going through, whether they're self-inflicted or not. And then you have to evaluate, is that something we believe is just a matter of maturity or is it a lingering problem?
A lot of the issues, this is a lot for anybody to handle. Yeah. And here's a guy who is, you know, trying to be or vying to be an early pick in the NFL draft. I do think the weight gain of 9 pounds between now and the combine is a bit of alarming. But again, regardless of whatever the situation may be, there's a limited amount of time before teams have to come up with the final evaluation and place these guys on their draft board.
Yeah.
And finally, real quick, Trey, if you could just reiterate, because I think Dino GC, who's watching us on YouTube, also joined us a little bit late. He brought up the idea of, do we know where things stand in the trade talks between the Packers and Jets? Trey, I believe you mentioned that this is not a seismic albatross that they need to overcome to get this deal done.
Yeah, we said this off the top, so I'll reiterate it. Look, there are a couple things that need to be done, but this is a lot closer to being done than I think people realize. And again, I'll just go with the sources that told me how this was going to play out. You know, one of the things they said was Aaron Rodgers believes he'll be in New York next week. So if that isn't an indicator that this thing is farther down than people think, that should that should help us in a somewhat of a time frame.
All right. On that note, that is going to do it for what is a, I can't believe we got this in an hour. Congratulations to Trey and Tony for getting this in, this marathon of a free agency special of Football Insiders. All three of us, Trey, Tony, and myself, will be with you each and every single week leading up to the NFL draft. So make sure you check this out on all of the Pro Football Network channels, whether that be Twitter, YouTube, or anywhere else. I'm Bray Harris. Tony and Trey are going to be with me each and every week, as I just said. We will see you next week with like 17 other storylines. See you then.
See you then, guys.